Warning. This is a comedy podcast that provides an irreverent, sarcastic, less than serious look at events described in the Bible. It contains profanity and explicit content and may not be suitable for children under 14. Listener discretion and a sense of humor strongly advised.
In a world where the Holy Bible is actually a streaming television show with a gigantic special effects budget, two people boldly watch and review every episode. Join these scripture script doctors as they discuss all the on-screen drama and off-screen hijinks of this fictional hit series.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to Wrath of Pod. My name is Deanna.
And my name is Marcus.
And I know we don't have a lot of time at the beginning of this episode because there is, again, a lot to get into, but I cannot let us go without giving the news that came out this week. I am so excited. They released the trailer for season 2. It looks absolutely incredible. I just want to make sure if any of you out there have not watched it 45 times the way that I have, definitely get over there and see it. It's just incredible. There are such rich colors. We're going back to Egypt. There are pyramids. There's a pharaoh. There are female characters with speaking lines. It just looks so cool. So we don't have time to talk about it very much, but Marcus, I have to ask if you could pick just one thing that you noticed in this trailer, what would it be?
I noticed in several scenes, God's eyes were different colors. They had contact lenses or something there.
Whoa.
And I wonder if the colors of his eyes is going to mean something next season. I don't know if it's reflecting his mood or his current power levels or what, or something totally unrelated. I think they were deliberately changing the color of his eyes. I'm pretty sure it wasn't a mistake. I think it's going to be a plot point.
Wow. Do you think that's going to be throughout the season, or maybe they're just pulling clips from one episode where that's a thing?
I don't know. Who knows? It's just a trailer, so I can't say. What about you? What did you like best?
Oh, wow. It is hard to pick just one thing. I also was noticing something about God. There's a new element to God's costume. He's got a crown that looks a little bit like fire and smoke. Again, I'm not sure if that's a one-time, one-episode thing or if that's going to be a consistent thing throughout the season, but the CG on this looked so cool. I'm so excited.
Big CGI fight coming up.
Well, we still got a few episodes left in season 1 before we get to all of the magic and madness that looks like is coming in season 2. So are you ready to get into it?
Absolutely. Let's jump right in. So here it is, season 1, episode 9 of The Holy Bible.
Last time on Wrath of Pod.
Esau is coming to meet his brother Jacob with 400 of his men. God challenged Jacob to a wrestling fight with a stadium-like seating and audience, and serves him a blessing.
I have my jaw on the floor at how Jacob talks to God. He really has favorite child status. Jacob introduces his wives and children to Esau.
We see Jacob's only daughter, Dinah.
Shechem, straight out of the toxic masculinity playbook. Like, oh yeah, I raped you, but it's because I was in love with you. Fuck you.
Simeon and Levi say their sister can marry Shechem if all men in the city are circumcised. Shechem gets this done and tells all the men in the city to do the same.
Circumcision day. It's an assembly line.
Afterwards, Simeon and Levi unleash hell on Shechem and every single guy in that city. Everyone is unable to defend themselves.
Rachel is pregnant again, but dies in childbirth.
The family arrive at Isaac's house. Isaac dies, and Jacob and Esau bury him.
So we open this week with Joseph. His brothers were kind of horsing around while they were watching the sheep, and Joseph was asking him to stop, and they were teasing him a little bit. And the very first thing we see is Joseph coming in to tell their dad that they were being mean to him. He's a real tattletale, but he can get away with it because he is clearly and explicitly Jacob's favorite son. So much so that Jacob gives him a special brightly colored tunic, which really makes all of the other brothers just green with envy. This tunic was eye-watering. It had all the colors. It was like sparkly, neon, 80s, oversaturated. This is not our costume department, right? Like, you know what this show looks like. This show is brown. And it has brown on brown, and then it puts brown on the brown on its brown. So I had to go find out who made this coat. They had to bring in a special tailor to make sure that they could have this extra fancy, super colorful coat. It was a special consultant who came in to do all of these colors. So that's my little behind the scenes trivia for this week.
Oh, you'd be surprised how detrimental a poor choice of fashion can be. Take this dress. It may be all the rage now, but in a very short time, it can become tiresome. An affront to the eyes. Certain people might even think it's objectionable. And then, nothing but rags.
I thought it was very interesting in today's climate to make this kind of statement, because this was clearly a pride flag. Mm-hmm. And you could just tell the colors and this whole story throughout. Joseph is held up as the hero. So to have him with this pride outfit, I thought was really impressive from the Holy Bible to put LGBTQA+ issues on the pedestal in a way that it deserves.
Yeah, it was really refreshing to see how Jacob was so much accepting of Joseph's sexuality, that he got him this coat so that he could be out and proud wherever he went.
He was singing, he was dancing, there were musical numbers. When he first had his coat and he was looking at it, admiring it in the mirror, and he started walking down the street and he went into a bit of a skip and he sort of started ho-humming. And then a few people came out of houses and they started ho-humming behind him. And then you heard, look at his coat, 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 look at his coat.
Yeah.
And then it went into a full-on musical number. I enjoyed it, actually.
I did too.
It was refreshing.
I liked it. I liked how they picked up that barbershop quartet that was just hanging out on the corner and just stopped all the traffic in the middle of the street. It was great. It really was making a big deal out of Joseph and his coat. And you can see why his brothers are pissed. Right. I think that's why they were going so hard on this kind of favoritism and this much attention to this amazingly colored coat, was to really sell the fact that his brothers are just ripshit at the attention that Joseph is getting. And not only are they being ignored by their father, Jacob, Jacob is actually aiding and abetting here.
It didn't get as much screen time, but at least during that musical number, after he threw the coat off onto a chair and was wearing multicolored rainbow spandex, then he just went full Freddie Mercury. I wonder if Jacob also bought him that kind of matching garments underneath for his stage presence.
Probably. Although you've got problems when daddy is not only putting you above and ahead of all of your siblings, but also buying your underwear.
At that time, I had long hair and black fingernails and makeup and everything. And to think that I'd sort of still be singing those songs, it sort of makes me sound old, doesn't it?
Well,
I don't look too bad for 37, I tell you.
Joseph tells his brothers about two dreams that he's had, and it's pretty clear what these dreams mean. They mean that Joseph is going to be ruling over all of these brothers as well as their parents. So in one of the dreams, all of the brothers and Joseph are gathering wheat in the field, and the brothers' wheat sheaves bow down in front of Joseph's wheat sheaf, which stays upright. And in the other dream, he sees the sun and the moon and 11 stars symbolizing his 11 brothers, and they're all bowing down to him. Joseph, read the room. If you have dreams in which you are lording it over your brothers who are already pissed at you, don't tell them about that. Put that in your little dream journal that's right by your bedside. Put the little heart-shaped lock on it and turn the key and just don't tell anybody about it, okay? He's just really shooting himself in the foot here.
And he really added a lot of drama to it. You know, he said something like, "There we were, binding sheaths in the field. Then behold, my sheaf arose and also stood upright. Also, Joseph, don't tell others about your sex dream. Great, you had a wet dream. Don't tell other people around you about it. I'm sure your sheaf arose and stood upright. Their sheaves stood all around and bowed down to your sheath." Yep. I get it. The metaphor, you don't have to be Freud to figure this one out.
It was also interesting that they were using this very old-timey cell style animation, like old Disney cartoons, like Steamboat Willie stuff, where there's a lot of repeated actions and it's a little bit jerky. And we just sort of jump into this other world whenever anybody is describing dreams in this episode. I think, again, to let the audience know that this is a dream that's being described and not something that's actually happening, but it was kind of trippy. Later, the rest of the brothers are out watching the flocks, and Jacob, again, making terrible parenting decisions, he sends Joseph out essentially to spy on them. He's really just on purpose setting Joseph against the rest of his brothers. So it's no surprise that when the other brothers see Joseph coming to check on them in the fields, they put their heads together and they decide that when he gets there, they're going to kill him.
I wasn't that impressed with the brothers' plan here. Part of it, fine. They'll say, we'll say that a wild beast devoured him. Okay, that's plausible. But then what do they do with him? We'll throw him in a pit. I'm like, hang on, what? Just leave him in a pit to be discovered after you say, and what? And to die of thirst and hunger or heat, depending on what's happening. Mm-hmm. You know what? I was about to criticize it for being stupid because I thought, well, why put him in a pit? Why don't you just kill him and then bury him?
Right.
Would be the obvious thing to do. Or set fire to him after he's dead, I mean, or something like that.
Should I be worried about you? Here's what I would do.
I'm just disposing of bodies.
And then you go to explain in excruciating detail about, like, you can't put them in, you know, you need some formaldehyde and you've got to get a plastic bag that's this big. And I'm like, back away slowly.
If this pilgrim feels a special relationship with the moon, he might like to go outside and look at it. You ever seen blood in the moonlight? Well, it appears quite black. If one were nude, say, it would be better to have outdoor privacy for that sort of thing.
Now I think about it, they really must hate Joseph because they are sentencing him to one of the worst possible deaths, which is by thirst or maybe by some sort of heat stroke scenario.
Yeah.
Wow. I mean, we treat our pets better than that, you know?
Yeah, but no one can needle you like a sibling.
I guess so.
And then we've got Reuben coming in. As a quick reminder to the audience, last we saw Reuben, he was fucking his dad's concubine. So here he is again. And I think he's trying to make up for it. I think he sees a little bit the error of his ways, or maybe he's trying to get back into Jacob's good graces after this weird sex with Bilhah incident, because Reuben talks them out of it. He's like, yeah, I'm good with the throwing him in a pit part. Let's do that. But don't kill him. And then you can see that Reuben is clearly planning to come back later and rescue Joseph so that he doesn't actually starve to death or die of heat stroke. So that's Reuben's plan. And he's the oldest and it seems to be sensible. So they all agree to it. And Reuben heads out and lets everyone else do the dirty work of tackling Joseph, stripping off his colorful tunic and throwing him into the pit. As they're celebrating, a traveling caravan of Ishmaelites come by. They're on their way to Egypt. And Judah here comes up with the dastardly scheme. You can see him gather all the rest of the brothers into a little huddle there, and they're peeking up out of their little rugby scrum to check on the Ishmaelites. And Judah suggests that what they should do is they should sell Joseph to them as a slave. If he's just dead, there's no profit in it.
The sixth rule of acquisition expressly states,
never allow family to stand in the way of opportunity. I certainly never have.
So much better to sell him and get the money and get rid of Joseph, solve all your problems, and you've got 20 shekels of silver to show for it as well. So that's what they do.
I wasn't sure how much 20 shekels of silver was. I needed a currency exchange to Wells and I need currency exchange to lamb coin. If I don't have the ratio, I don't know, is this a lot? Is this a little? I didn't know what 20 shekels of silver really means.
Yeah, I think the thing was because it was a traveling caravan of Ishmaelites, they couldn't carry the wells with them. I think it's like a medium amount. You know, Joseph's like a good slave, but also they were probably a little bit too eager to get rid of him. They probably could have gotten a better price if they'd hung on for a little bit longer in those negotiations. And I thought that the way that they shot this scene was interesting because we get a lot of it from the perspective of Joseph in the pit. He can't really see what's happening, but he can hear some of the voices and he can hear some of the haggling. And then you see the hand reach down into the pit and Joseph is like, oh, thank goodness, I'm saved. And his brothers pull him out and then shove him towards the Ishmaelites who tie him up and take him away. I really loved the way they did that reversal where you could see Joseph trying to work out what was happening and he thought it was going to be good for him, but it was not. I thought it was a nice bit of direction there. Reuben now comes back for the part of his plan where he's going to fish Joseph out of the pit and return triumphant to their father. And he looks down in the pit and we've got another famous Holy Bible double take of Reuben looking in the pit and then looking again. And Joseph isn't there. He's gone. And he learns that the rest of the brothers have sold him into slavery. Oops.
And you see it in Reuben's eyes as he realizes what this means. Mm-hmm. Effectively, from his point of view at this point, Joseph's done.
Yeah.
Like, you know, he's never going to see him again. And so he raises his fists, looks up into the sky and says,
no!
Interesting take.
Reuben is actually a clever guy. I really wish we got to know this character better. This part is really making me question what we know about Reuben or who he is or the sort of person that he wants to be perceived as. We've only seen bits and snippets of him sleeping with Bilhah for some reason and now wanting to save Joseph and now coming up with this clever plan to make sure that none of them get into trouble for the whole selling Joseph into slavery thing. So I hope that this is another backdoor pilot for our Reuben character here, because he seems like he's got a lot going on under the surface.
Joseph is a name that I'm familiar with. I know people called Joseph.
Absolutely.
Reuben, not so much. Do you know Reuben?
One case where we frequently use the word Reuben, and it involves rye bread, Russian dressing, and roast beef is a Reuben sandwich.
Reuben, you're right. Our eyes were bigger than our stomachs.
That's exactly what it is. Pure ego.
Yeah. Blah, blah, blah.
Thank you for lunch.
Oh, wow. Okay. Never mind. Interesting. I had no idea.
So the brothers make a new plan because they've got Joseph's special multicolored pride coat. They kill a goat kid and they dip Joseph's coat in it.
When they got to the goat kid, I could have sworn it was going to be either Esau or one of Esau's sons. I was like, are you sure that is a goat? Because they're in a family who are known to wear goat costumes to steal blessings. And either it's going to be something that looks like a goat because that inspired the goat costume, or maybe it's someone else in a different goat costume trying to pretend to be Esau or one of his kids. Either way, a lot of potential mix-up here. So don't just go killing random goats because it might not be a goat after all, but might be one of your family in disguise. Or just one of your family who just happens to look quite goatish might be your uncle.
Elmo wants to see more families, all kinds. But where can Elmo find them?
They dip Joseph's coat in the blood from this goat kid who they have killed, and they bring it back to Jacob. And they ask Jacob if he recognizes it. And Jacob loses his shit. And I think that's fair, right? If somebody brings you a bloody coat that your child, especially your favorite child, was wearing that morning, he draws the conclusion that Joseph has been killed by a wild animal and he is completely inconsolable.
I was a little bit thrown at first because when he's given the coat with blood on and you see his face show despair and he was like, no, and he's looking at it and then he says, This is not going to come out. Do you know how hard it is to wash out blood? I can't use bleach on this. This is a medium temperature garment at most. I cannot get this out. I'm going to have to change a lot. And then the little brothers are kind of like, do the math. And then he's like, oh. And then he's even more upset.
I think this actor was overdoing it a bit here. I mean, this was a big moment for him, but it just went on and on and on. Cut to like 5 different angles of his face going, no, no. Oh, Joseph. I went and got a beer at this point and it kept going.
Here's a question for you. Imagine your favorite rainbow coat has got blood on it and you want to use it, but this is going to look like you're wearing a coat with blood on it.
Yeah.
What do you do?
Oh, interesting. I think I'd probably get some other dye and try to make it look like it's blended in with the rest of the pattern. You try to work with it, right? You want to make some lemonade out of those lemons. So that's what I would do.
I'm very close, except instead of dye, I'm using my own blood. I'm going to take some blood. I'll like cut my thumb or something. Somewhere non-important, like my thumb. Well, that's kind of important, actually. I'll find somewhere that's not that important.
You keep wanting to chop off your fingers. This has been a consistent thing with you.
Is it?
Yes.
Yeah,
I asked what you would do instead of circumcision. If you had to negotiate God down. Do you remember this?
Oh, yeah. Pinky.
He's like, I'll offer my pinky. Yeah, pinky. I'm like, finger. Dude.
Yeah.
You need your fingers.
Yeah.
Wait, you're using your own blood? You're not going out to the craft shop and getting some dye that matches? You're actually shedding blood for this garment? You must really like this coat.
I also wouldn't want to maybe put my blood on a coat, but it feels like the sort of thing where there are some mystical consequence. Like if someone else puts the coat on, they have control over me, like dominion over me, because it's my blood is within the coat or something like that.
That is definitely how bloodstains work in the real world. Yep.
Yeah.
Tell me you've been playing too much D&D without telling me you've been playing too much D&D.
Yeah.
There are different vintages. Young Noble is wonderful if you can get it, but Crone has its charms too.
Yeah, that's true.
I love my morning coffee, but sometimes the crash hits harder than the caffeine. That's when I switch to Everyday Dose, coffee with benefits. It's real coffee, infused with mushrooms, collagen, and nootropics, giving me smooth, focused energy that actually lasts. Right now, get 61% off your first Coffee Plus starter kit and over $100 in free gifts. Plus, enter for a chance to win $100 cash or get your entire order refunded. Visit everydaydose.com/podcast or use code podcast at checkout.
Amen. Then we finally cut away from Jacob's melodrama to the Ishmaelite traders and their traveling camel caravan. They get to Egypt and they sell Joseph as a slave to Potiphar, who is one of Pharaoh's officers. And we fade out on that scene as Potiphar is leading Joseph in chains into his household. And we leave that story for a moment on a little bit of a cliffhanger, and we shift gears to Judah.
We are now with Judah, who leaves their family to visit friends, taking a bit of a journey. He marries someone called Shua, and they have 3 sons, Onan and Shelah, and marries Tamar. And then has a little bit of a, well, let's call it a mishap. He has judgment called down upon him, in the sense that he does something off screen that we don't see, but we see him sneaking around at night. Who knows what he did?
Mm-hmm.
And then we cut straight to him lying in bed when we split screening to God, who is watching. He's rewinding. He's on the TiVo. He's probably out, so he was just catching it back up again. He's looking at it, sees it. He's drinking water at the time, spits out the water, and then just clicks his fingers, and then you see this lightning bolt slam through the house into the bed, and is no more.
Was incinerated here.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was also wondering what he was doing. I think probably selling mortgage-backed securities.
That trading makes sense. He was probably up at night because that was the market open hours in China.
Right.
So he needed to be out and doing it then.
Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense.
That's the one. Yeah. Evil stuff, for sure. Shorting little old ladies out of their retirement.
Exactly. So now we have a situation where we've got Tamar, who is widowed because has died. And Judah encourages Onan, the other brother, to marry. you're like, hey, I want you to stay in the family so much, I'm going to offer my other son to marry you. I mean, you've put on a really good impression there. If the family are like, quick, let's find another partner so we can keep her in the family so she keeps coming to Thanksgiving. Jesus, you've really done well.
She must make a really good casserole. That's what it is.
That must be it. Yeah, exactly. And she's wisely not giving them the recipe.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is, Onan's a little bit uncertain about all this because any kids that he has with Tamar, because it was Ur's wife, would count for him. For count for Ur, that is.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Ur would get credit.
Right.
This, at that point, as a reminder, Ur is dead.
Yep.
Ur has been incinerated. But Onan is like, if I have kids with his widow, then Ur is going to still get credit. And I'm not sure how I feel about that.
I think this is something about the world building that at least I'm not wrapping my head around, because there's a lot of cases where babies are being had by one person, but they actually count for somebody else's team. Like, we've had this with Jacob and his various wives and their children, and we were putting up numbers for Rachel on the board, even though they weren't her biological children. And now we're putting up numbers for Ur on the board, even though they're technically Onan's children, though with the same woman. I feel like the writing team could have just been a little bit clearer as to what the rules are in this world about what counts for what. I think that would make these moments hit a little bit harder if we had a little bit more background on that.
Does this imply that there is some other plane of existence that we haven't seen yet where Ur is hanging out? The very fact that it still would count for Ur made me think, well, why is he still getting scores at all? Where is he? You know, what is happening? We haven't seen anything like that, but it makes me wonder if some of our characters are actually going to be somewhere else. Maybe in the future we'll see what they're up to in some other plane of existence.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I would like that. There are definitely characters I would love to bring back off of this show. I thought they were just off the board, but I like that idea. Maybe not.
So in this circumstance, if for some whatever reason you had this belief, any normal person would say, okay, I'm not going to hook up with Tamar. I'm just going to leave it be. That's not Onan's style. He says, okay, I've been given the whole pass. I'm going to use it. But I'm still really, really unsure about this whole having kids with her and it counting for my brother thing. It's interesting the way they shot this. They're getting it on and your camera is doing what it does where they're showing certain parts but not others. But you can kind of imply some of it's kind of covered, some not. And then when things get like they're getting to the right point, he throws her away from him. And then you see the camera go to the ground and just see semen.
You read the Bible, Ringo?
Not regularly, no.
Well, there's this passage I got memorized.
Genesis 38:8. And Judah said to Onan, go into your brother's wife and marry her and raise up an heir to your brother. But Onan knew that the heir would not be his. And it came to pass when he went into his brother's wife that he emitted on the ground, lest he should give an heir to his brother.
I never gave much thought to what it meant. I just thought it was some cold-blooded shit to say to a motherfucker before I popped a cap in his ass.
Just splatter, like a Jackson Pollock painting, on the ground.
It was a very artistic splatter.
It was. Onan has big pull-out game.
Yeah, it was explicit. I know we've had a lot of sex in this show, and it does start to get old after a while. You're like, oh, good, there's another sex scene. But this show, basically every week, is upping the ante, right? Like, we have a sex scene, and then we have a rape scene, and then we have a full-on withdrawal method illustration in explicit detail.
We see the Jackson Pollock painting, and you see it on the ground, and then we have a split screen so that God appears on the right-hand side. And what I thought was interesting is he's watching all of this on his big TV, and he's got a salad, and he's just putting mayonnaise on the salad right as that happens. And you see him look at it and look at the screen and look down again and just push the salad to the side. Like, I can't have this anymore. And he clicks his fingers. Lightning strike. And Onan's down.
Every sperm is sacred. Every sperm is great. If a sperm is wasted, God gets quite irate.
God is bringing back smiting in a big way. He's been pretty good about not destroying people in the last couple of weeks. And he's like, God is back, baby.
Let the
Tamar, right? She has to wake up next to two different men who've been fried to a crisp in their sleep. And at this point, she's like, I am out of here. I'm done with this family. And I get it, girl. You go.
Yeah. And if you're Tamar, you got to be wondering what it means. Are you radioactive? What is happening where all your partners, when you go to sleep, are getting crisped? I don't know what I would think.
Yeah.
I would think I have some superpower where I get really hot when I sleep and I'm burning everything around me. She must be terrified.
Yep.
You would think at this point that Judah would look at this and say, okay, marrying anyone to Tamar is a bad idea.
Mm-hmm.
But it turns out that that casserole is so good for Thanksgiving that Judah's like, all right, I'm going to go for a third time. I'll risk it with my youngest son, Sheila. You know, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. And now he's like, oh, screw that. I'm going for a third time.
Yeah. Let's do the hat trick on this.
As many sons as it takes to keep having those recipes cooked for me. So he sends Tamar back to her own parents' house to live there, afraid that if they get married right now, the smiting is going to happen. So time passes and Judah loses interest. He just basically had no plans to actually ending up marrying Shayla to Tamar, as was the original plan. And Tamar's told this. She said, hey, by the way, I spoke to Judah and I was like, hey, you got any plans? Any big events coming up in the next 20 years? And his answer was no. So Tamar's like, wait, what? What do you mean no big plans in the next 20 years? So she does something unexpected and interesting.
Spoiler alerts, Tamar, she's got the beauty, she's got the brains, and she's got the casserole. She is the total package here. She really sticks it to Judah. I liked it.
It's true. What Tamar does is she says, hell yeah, you think there's going to be no big events? I'll show you. And so she dresses up in her most provocative clothing and goes to a particular street corner. It seems like the red light district kind of area in town. And Judah walks on by and she comes over to him and twiddles her finger in a certain way in her hair and makes it clear that she's into him. He doesn't recognize that this is Tamar.
Genesis 38, 15. When Judah saw her, he thought she was a harlot because she had covered her face. Then he turned to her by the way and said, please let me come into you. For he did not know that she was his daughter-in-law. So she said, what will you give me that you may come into me? And he said, I will send a young goat from the flock.
I don't know if it was the makeup. You know, sometimes people's makeup game is very strong. They can almost look like a different person.
Mm-hmm. Also, I think it's hereditary because his father also did not recognize that he'd gotten fucked the wrong woman when he married Leia instead of Rachel. So I think there's some kind of genetic situation here where the men in this family don't recognize the women in their lives after the sun goes down.
Strong prosopagnosia risk in this family.
That must be it.
So they're now negotiating a price for her services for the night. And Judah is saying, hey, I got this young goat from this flock. You know, he's up to his neck in goats, so this is easy for him. He's like, yeah, I got this goat. You can have a goat. And she seems pretty into this, but obviously he doesn't have it on him. So they do a little arrangement where he says, all right, I will give you my signet ring and cord and staff as collateral. You can hold on to them and then we'll do the deed. And then later you'll give it to me back when I give you the goat. So they do it.
Yeah, they do. I don't know about exchange rates. Again, you're right. I really wish I had a little bit more information about the currency here. Is a goat coin worth the same as a lamb coin? I think a goat coin's worth more, given that if you're negotiating for a high-class prostitute the way that Tamar is pretending to be, I don't think that she'd be satisfied with like just a couple of lamb coin. I think you'd need to trade up at that point.
That makes sense, but I think she has a different reward in mind anyway. It's not just the goat. It turns out that she is pregnant from this. You see her holding her belly and you're like, oh, you know what this means. You see her going in shops, baby clothes shops and stuff like that.
Yep. She's getting the prenatal vitamins.
Yeah, exactly. Judah tries to get the goat sent to her, but the thing he puts on the package is that hot woman on the corner of this street that does that thing with her tongue. And that's not enough to get the goat to her.
Oh, she's got his goat. That's for sure. It's like she vanished. Judah, amazing character, wanted to murder and then sell into slavery his own brother. but he pays his debts. He is really insistent that he has to come find this woman, this prostitute, who he bought the services of for this night. He really is feeling strongly about making sure that she gets this goat.
A Lannister always
Don't
pays-
say it. Don't fucking say it.
Indeed. And the news comes to Judah that his daughter-in-law is pregnant. We all know why she's pregnant, but he doesn't. And he is shocked because she's not married. Seems he's pretty old school about this kind of thing.
Yeah.
Which is funny for a guy who just bought the services of a prostitute for a goat. Okay, one standard for me and a different one for thee, I guess. He's outraged. He says he's going to burn her. He actually says, bring her out and let her be burned.
Yeah.
At first, it was so ludicrous that someone would say this. It was so crazy that that would be the response. I thought he meant like a roast. Like, well, this will be a good burn. You think you're looking good, but what is it? 1982. Oh, burn.
Oh,
you know, I thought
one.
That's what it was going to be. Yeah. But no, he means literally burn. He's like, no, I want you to start getting some firewood here.
Yeah, he shows up at her house with an armful of kindling and demands to know who got her pregnant.
Yep. What do you do with witches?
Burn! Burn! Burn!
And what do you burn apart from witches?
For witches!
And she pulls out his ring, his cord and staff, the very same that he had given to her to hold on to as collateral until the goat arrived. And in the instant, he was like, oh, that's where those things went. Because he had been missing those for this whole time. So he was kind of relieved to get those back. But then he eventually did the math and was like, oh, turns out he was the one who treated her as a prostitute and got her pregnant. He then drops the idea of burning her for a number of reasons, not least that she's carrying his future kids.
At least he gets to keep the casserole.
He does have the casserole.
Yeah. So now we cut back to Egypt in Potiphar's household. And Joseph is doing really well here because God favors him, obviously. And he's soon put in charge of actually running the household. Even though he's a slave, Potiphar comes to trust him completely to do all of his books and to manage all of his money and to run up all sorts of expenses.
Throughout various things that he's doing, he's clearly very successful and he's lucky. There are times when you see him going fishing and then he's the one getting all the fish. It's basically he is somehow has the power of luck, a divine sort of luck.
Mm-hmm.
What, you shoot luck lasers out of your eyes? It's just, it's hard to picture. It's certainly not very cinematic.
You get the sound. For example, there was that time when he was crossing that street and he saw a coin in the street and he bent over and it's a good job he did because a second later, a horse just ran right past.
Mm-hmm.
And so he would have walked out into the street if he hadn't seen the shiny shekel. Then you hear the noise. So it's like, oh, God made the shekel glint. Mm-hmm. So he stopped. He grabbed it. I wasn't totally clear on how micromanaging God was of all of this or if he can farm it out to some other power. Is he just saying, you're now lucky? And it all goes well? Or does God have to be like, oh no, now I'm like a watchman on a CCTV security camera job where I'm like looking at everything and I have to intervene? I don't know how hands-on God was.
I'm going to guess God was pretty hands-on because it's not like Joseph is entirely lucky about literally everything. I mean, I'd like to take him to this casino and then take him to bed because this actor is so good looking. I'm sorry. I just have to pause here for a second. This was a slice of beefcake. Wow, he's got the square jaw, he's got the chiseled muscles, he's got like perfume ad vibes. This is one really good looking guy. You can see why Potiphar's wife is into him. Shades of the Graduate here. We've got an older woman after a younger man, and she is just drooling for him.
This is Robinson, you're trying to seduce me. Aren't you?
She will follow him around the house. She's going to perch herself on the edge of the desk when he's trying to do work and cross and uncross her legs provocatively. She is throwing everything at Joseph. And Joseph's not having it. I was surprised at this, actually. I don't know if this is just me wanting to believe the worst of this character because he seems like a spoiled Nepo baby. But Joseph says, no, Potiphar trusts me and I'm not going to betray his trust by sleeping with his wife. This isn't happening. So that surprised me. How did you feel about that?
You know, when we first met him, he was bragging a lot and talking about how his dreams were mm-hmm. showing him to be the ruler of his brothers and all sorts of things like that. I wondered if, you know, we've seen him kind of growing a little bit. He's been given responsibility. When you're a certain age and you're given work for the first time and you actually have responsibility, it can cause you to grow up a bit.
Yeah.
I wonder if that's what we're seeing here.
Also, being literally sold into slavery by your brothers might have given him a little bit of pause about how he's treating the other people in his life. So perhaps he's learned
a bit of
a lesson. But she is relentless. And one day when they're alone in the house, she manages to get his clothes off. This isn't too much of a trouble considering that he's basically wearing a one-piece robe situation. So she just grabs it and the whole thing unravels like a mm-hmm. roll of toilet paper. He runs away, but this gives her cover. So she calls the rest of the servants in and raises the alarm and says, Joseph was trying to violate me. I barely escaped. Look, I had to tear these clothes off him and you should go catch him because he's out there running around naked right now, which he does throughout the entirety of this whole chase scene. And they're like opening the doors and then they're down the hallway and then he comes out the other hallway and then they back into each other and they go, it's you. And then they run in opposite directions, like slightly sped up on the film. Yeah.
Yes.
It was fun.
Exactly.
And he's just flapping.
Yeah, it was fun to see.
And Potiphar has Joseph thrown into jail. I can't blame him for this, honestly. He believes his wife over his slave. And that kind of makes sense in the sort of society that we see that they're running here, even though we as the audience know that this is completely unjust. This is where the Shawshank Redemption vibes come in, because the jailer is also into Joseph and favors him and puts him in charge of the other prisoners and trusts him with taking care of everybody and making sure that the newcomers get acclimated and all of that kind of thing.
So what's happening now is that Pharaoh's butler and baker have basically gone on his nerves. You see one of them is chewing his food too loudly. The other taps the desk really loud. Eventually, he can't take it anymore. So Pharaoh sends the butler and the baker to jail.
Mm-hmm.
And in jail, they each have a dream. And they don't know how what to make of it. They're not really into dreams. But they've heard that Joseph, because he wouldn't shut the fuck up about his dreams and his past dream and what it meant for his brothers in the past. He just goes on and on. So like, well, we're here. Joseph knows something about dreams, I guess. So mm-hmm. what's the harm? So the butler describes a dream. And in the dream, he is picking grapes from a vine, making him into wine, and then giving the wine to his boss, Pharaoh. And so Joseph says, okay, you're going to soon be released. And when you are released, please go and tell Pharaoh about me being in here. So maybe you can let me out. So the baker then talks about his dream where he has baskets of baked goods on his head and the birds come and eat them. Now, Joseph never really seemed to like the baker that much. They kind of bristled. And so Joseph says, oh, yeah, that means you're going to be hanged and birds are going to eat your flesh. Bit harsh from Joseph in the interpretation.
Especially because he was describing this over dinner. They're all in the prison mess hall, you know, with those tin bowls and stuff at the tables. And Joseph is just going on and on and on in gruesome detail about the gross way that these birds are going to eat the baker's flesh.
Yep.
And you see the baker take his bowl and just push it across the table and he's done.
And he's ripping apart his steak as he's saying that. The birds are going to rip the flesh.
Mm-hmm.
And he's doing it. It's like, oh, God, you're pantomiming it right to him.
Mm-hmm.
Turns out that a few days later, butler is indeed let go and restored to Pharaoh's service. And the baker is hanged.
Yeah. And then we actually see that happen. It was a totally gross scene where the baker is hanged from the tree and there are vultures coming and ripping his body and you can see the flesh falling off it. Usually we don't do body horror on this show, but I guess they were missing that genre. So they decided to throw it in here, but it was genuinely disgusting. Too bad God was putting ketchup on his burger at exactly that moment. I think God needs to watch out which condiments he's using at various points here. Poor guy, he cannot get a break when he's watching TV and eating dinner.
Unfortunately for poor Joseph, the butler does not have good memory or intent and actually never tells Pharaoh about Joseph. He's just happy to be back. And probably, honestly, after hearing about the dreams again and again, he was probably sick of it. So he's just like, you know what, I'm just going to leave this guy where he is.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what happened to Joseph's luck there. It kind of like failed him there at the crucial moment.
How so?
Stuck in jail.
Oh, well, I wasn't taking that at being his luck was entirely failed. I think that's just where we end the episode, which I liked. I liked ending on a bit of a down note or a low note. So
fair enough.
Perhaps we will pick up with this character next week. You might be right.
For all I know, the whole town is about to have a tornado go through it. And the reason he's still stuck in jail is because his luck is holding him there. And then when the tornado goes by, then he'll be released so that he can walk into the sunny pastures. Mm-hmm. That's very likely, actually, given his luck.
I thought it was a nice ending. He's waiting in prison. Any day now, the butler's going to tell Pharaoh about me and Pharaoh's going to come let me out. Any day now. Yep, it's definitely happening. And the scene just gets darker and darker and it fades out as he's pacing back and forth in his prison cell. From an artistic perspective, I thought it looked really good. I like the direction on that this week. So that's where we wrap up our episode this week. So now I'm going to ask you, Marcus, what was the weirdest name that you found in this week's episode?
I'm sorry, what was your name again?
Say my name.
Bigus.
You're goddamn right.
I have a very great friend in Rome called Bigus Dickus.
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
Wait, no, seriously, what's your actual name?
Wait, your Bigus Dickus hears of this.
This was an easy one for me.
Yep.
No, I'm not just using a filler word. I mean, is the name.
I have the same one. I wrote down the same one.
Okay, there you go. Of course.
This is what happens.
You
we don't have
kid,
Lot anymore. Huh? We named the baby the very first sound that their parents made when the baby came out. What do you want to name him? Okay, got it.
And then they didn't have the heart to go to the midwife and say, well, actually, they didn't. They were like, no, that's exactly what I intended.
Mm-hmm.
It's exactly. Yeah, that's a very British thing to do, just to let your kid be called because you don't want to actually correct the record.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say that's a very American thing to do. Have you ever tried to get your name changed at the Social Security Administration? Once it's on there, it is on there forever. Okay. Just forget trying to get through that mess of paperwork. His name's just leave it.
So, Deanna, what do we think about this god character?
I am not the god of war. I am the god of truth.
God likes to watch. He's a prankster.
Blasphemy. You're lucky I don't cast you out or smite you or something.
You've been doing a lot of complaining about me. Quite frankly, I'm tired of it.
How shall we fuck off, O Lord?
I'm just going to say it. God is a messy bitch who likes drama. He is messing with people here because he can. I am so sick of this favoritism bullshit. We got this whole story about him unleashing hell on Judah and his sons and his family and this payback from Tamar because Judah sold Joseph, who's his favorite. I think he just likes Joseph because he's a pretty face. It's like rebound energy. I mean, yeah, I like to see God smiting some people, but I would like to see him smiting some people for an actual reason. Yeah, I'm not feeling God this week.
A blessing from the Lord.
Before Deanna and Marcus wrap up this episode, I am here to tell you that my 11th commandment is, you shall not enjoy this podcast without rating and reviewing it.
Good idea, O Lord.
Help others to find this podcast by rating and reviewing it on your podcast app. Now, let's return to the action.
God be praised.
Me be praised. God out.
How about you?
I agree. He gave some strike downs, some deaths from above without any context for them or the people around them. So there wasn't any way for them to learn or to know what the hell is going on. It's that classic, like, oh, something went bad. What was it? And they've got to try to infer and figure out the cause.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that's not the time to play mysterious God. There is a time to be fun and mysterious, but being mysterious about the reason you smited and killed someone, that doesn't work.
Yeah.
That's not good. That's not good look.
No. Maybe it's progress because it's just one person at a time now instead of the entire world or entire cities. But, yeah, get it together, God. I hope you manage to do that before next week's episode, and we will be back with our review of that. So we will look forward to having you join us then. In the meantime, I will say, Pod be with you.
Amen.
Amen.
To continue the conversation, follow us on social media at Wrath of Pod. To get in touch, email us at mail@wrathofpod.com. Pod be with you.
All views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in this podcast are our own and are presented for entertainment and commentary purposes only. Any third-party music, clips, or other media are included solely for the purpose of critique, commentary, review, or transformative use, all of which fall within fair use. We make no claim of ownership over included third-party material, which remains the property of its respective owners. This podcast is not affiliated with, endorsed by, or sponsored by any of the creators, owners, or distributors of included media.